My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your Frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Check me out at the annual Black Effect Podcast Festival happening Saturday, April 27th in Atlanta. Live podcasts are on deck from some of your favorite shows, including this one, Black Tech Green Money, and also some of the best podcasts in the game, like Deeply Well with Devi Brown and Carefully Reckless. Atlanta is one of my favorite cities in the world. I lived there for 2 years, actually. And my worldview, seeing us successful in every industry and not having any limits on our potential, largely was shaped by Atlanta. So to be there with you, doing this podcast, talking about how we build or leverage technology to build wealth, come on, man, it doesn't get better. I want to see you there. Get your tickets today at blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech Green Money. John and Mike Burns, known as the Burns Brothers, are serial entrepreneurs with companies in a variety of verticals like organizational culture and diversity, marketing, PR and events, hospitality and lifestyle. You may have heard of their companies like Manchester Park, the creative agency, HQ House, a social club, or Koi Collective, a DEI strategy firm. John is an attorney by trade and community activist. Mike is a seasoned executive, coach, and former Army officer. The Burns brothers have found synergy working together, and their company is growing internationally. And they set their sights on the African continent, working in Kenya, South Africa, Ethiopia, and more. There's a lot of opportunity on the continent that many Black entrepreneurs from the States are taking advantage of, whether they're simply finding opportunities or partnering with natives on business moves. For the Burns brothers, what about the continent said to them, this is your next move?
So Mike and I have been doing work in Africa for the last 5-7 years. So we understood kind of the opportunity that exists there and the need that exists there. But we also wanted to be a bridge between African-Americans here in this country and then Africans on the continent. We recognize that Africa is going to be 25% of the world's population in the next like decade and a half. And so how can we be stewards for change? How can we really be that connective tissue? And we thought, just based upon our experience, there was tremendous opportunity to have that connection point.
So when you think about going into new territory, there's not just about having the dollars and resources to go open up, but there's also, you know, political implications, and I don't mean like law and politics, but like nuances about being in a certain space that you don't necessarily know, being from the proverbial outside. So how do you do that when you go into a space? Like, did you have local partners? How did you consider this new territory to find that, you know, we want to be successful here? This is the guy, the girl, the lady, the man that can help us navigate that.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. So we specialize in the connection and the community, but we will readily admit we don't know Africa as well as is needed to deliver what we're trying to deliver. So partnership is essential. And so as John said, we've been doing this and integrating ourselves into Africa over the past 5 and 7 years, primarily in the space of like helping to decrease the unemployment rates, which are crazy across the continent. So if you're a skilled African, Black African, about 30% of the time you will be unemployed. So these are people who went to college, they did all the right thing, they're unemployed. And if you're a Black woman, that moves to almost 70%. So over the past couple of years, we've been partnered with organizations, specifically three organizations, one called CCI, which is the biggest private employer. They do call center services. So when you're thinking about how do you employ a lot of people at one time, like the call center industry is one of those spaces. So we partner with CCI. Also another organization called Talent Match, which focuses on people who have really high levels of skill, like developers, digital marketers, designers, and how do you place those people, get them jobs. And then finally, the third organization that really kind of helped us out as well is this organization called Rendeavor. And they're actually building cities across the continent of Africa because they have a proposition that you can't bring multicultural or multinational organizations into or on the continent because the infrastructure is not right. So you need to build from scratch. So they're actually building these cities. And so with those three partners, they have feet and boots on the ground. Plus they've just been great guides to ensure that we're connected with the right people and doing the right things to set up for success.
You know, it's interesting when you said that, I thought about a question I get asked a lot, because I have three buildings, commercial properties, and they're in a census tract that is not great. And so, but the opportunity to build things that are great in the census tract is a really great opportunity. And so my question is directed at like the spirit of entrepreneurship where you're building in Africa. You know, so you have two guys, you know, from the United States going and taking advantage of an opportunity, building something to help people, to create connections for them, create opportunities for them, and et cetera. How do you recognize the spirit of entrepreneurship as pervasive there and the ability to get something started? Because when you have 30%, 70% unemployment, I imagine I got to go start something because nobody's trying to hire me.
Well, it's interesting, and I'll turn it over to John, but like entrepreneurship comes out of problem sets oftentimes. And when you don't have a lot of opportunity, your whole life is a problem set. And so you have to create and figure things out. So if you think about just the richness of entrepreneurship in Africa on the continent, it's inherently already there. And so finding the talent to partner with, finding the talent to actually employ there to help drive our mission, having people that have this visionary mindset, it's not something you have to teach. It just already is ingrained in who they are just based off of their socioeconomic and personal circumstances. So, John, I don't know if you have other pieces to add to that.
No, I totally agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think for us, based upon kind of the mindset that we kind of move with, it was all around driving opportunity. It's this wealth of enthusiasm, this wealth of knowledge, this wealth of talent, this wealth of expertise, but just a lack of opportunity. And I, speaking to like the entrepreneurship point that Mike mentioned, there's so many bright minds. And so our mission, separate apart from HQ, is how can we drive opportunity? How can we drive engagement? And how can we ultimately drive impact?
I want to ask that same question kind of, you know, like about DC. Is you have HQ DC House now, which I think is fantastic. And I also have a social club. I don't know if so, but I'm interested in this question of, you know, is it important to have sort of a mission oriented social club, like dedicated to helping a community achieve, you know, specific things or general things, even not even specific things? Or is it the social aspect of having a club to where, you know, cool people just want to hang out with other cool people? Is that enough?
Yeah, that's a great question. I want Mike to kind of jump in here too. Our club is unique in the sense it's really based upon three core principles, right? So it's the social aspect, which is really important, But for us, the almost more important aspect is the development, both personal and professional. We think it's important to, as people of color, that we're being developed personally and professionally. And so we have cohorts, we have workshops, we have classes that really focus on that critical piece. And we always say, while we want to create social experience, we want to create a safe space, we are really driven by ultimately how can we mobilize, how can we support, and how can we empower people. And so to answer your question, we kind of convey to our membership the importance of how can you collectively or individually make an impact, whether it be in your personal life, your community, or on a global scale. And that's kind of the mantra that we move with. And so it's bigger than the social experiences. It's bigger than the cool vibe. It's bigger than the parties. It's really this global community that we're trying to create that really kind of convenes Black folks around the world. And we can kind of speak to that some more too.
Yeah, Mike, please go in on this.
Yeah, and it is actually a really good question, Will, because I don't know if it's an either or, right? I think that at the end of the day, whether it be a social club or you're making a widget, right, you have to have like passion or drive around what you're doing. And so John and I just happen to have passion and drive about making a change and impact. We come from, you know, grandfathers and mothers of like the civil rights movement, right? So everything we ever saw was people who were putting self second and others first in order to drive change in the community. And so we just happen to create a product that is tied to that. Could we have done it and just been a social club and had parties and drinks? I've seen that model work as well. But for us, that really wasn't the foundation of why we were doing it.
Yeah, so I love your responses on this, and I want to go a level deeper, because when I think about, like, take Soho House, you know, like, they don't have to have a mission to galvanize people. They could just open a club. But like, so it's like when we do things, and I don't know if that's, you know, just inherent because of our history, but like when we do things, they tend to be more mission oriented. And mine has a mission. Like Toll House has a mission. Like our job, I believe, is to organize the community's doers. So I have a social club. I should probably just tell you a little bit about it, because if you don't know. So Toll House is a private social club. You know, it's for the city dwelling creative and entrepreneurial class. And it's built on the waterfront here in my hometown. It's 25,000 square feet. So we have that social part, five bars, five lounges, a coffee house, jazz club, et cetera. But what we're doing is organizing the people in the community who are doing the work to help our community be what it could be if we got out of our own way. And so when people hear about where I'm from, they're like, oh, you know, sorry to hear that. Or, you know, there's all the young people want to leave when they graduate from high school and all of these things. And I'm like, we have really cool stuff here. We just got to get the right people in the right place to know each other and to create that cross-pollination and et cetera. But then you think about a different type of club, our counterparts, they don't have to do that. They could just go put a beautiful space, and if like if you want to be in, you in, or maybe not in, but you know, because their waiting lists are, you know, I would love to have that sort of waiting list, but they don't have to have the mission underpinning the community. So I'm interested in your thoughts on at what point, or is it important to even aspire to just be able to do something just because this will be dope?
Well, damn, that's really good, brother. So this is how I interpret it, and I like it just hits me, right? Could we do it? Absolutely. Would it be successful? Absolutely. Would we have like a waiting list like some of our competitors? Could. I mean, it's a tough, but I think why we tend to go towards like the impact in the community, I think there's something inherently built in us based off our history.
Yeah.
That our survival is based off community. And also our strength comes from community. So I think naturally when we build, I mean, think about it, we grew up in the church. We grew up in like fraternities, sororities, like everything, especially in the Black experience, is very much tied to community. So I think we naturally just migrate to it, even when we go into entrepreneurial ventures, because that's where we find our collective power. So I think we do, and we could be just as successful without the community, our empowerment-based aspect, but I think based off of our customer base, both you and ours, our client and our customer base need the community aspect of it probably more than some of our competitors.
Yeah, you want to chime in on that, John?
No, I couldn't agree more. I really have nothing to add. And I think it, to Mike's point, I think it's kind of based on the foundational fabric of who we are as people of color. And I think it's heightened by the continual kind of visceral political climate that we live in this country, right? We need safe spaces to convene and ultimately community to help us mobilize. And so I think whether it be your membership club, which is super dope, man, so congratulations, that sounds incredible, or it's ours or others, I think the foundational framework of what we do as people of color is mobilize through community. You think about every organization from Jack and Jill to the Lynx, I know Mike mentioned like the Divine Nine, everything's based upon like, how can we convene? How can we mobilize to ultimately move our culture forward?
100%.
And so it really begs the question to your point, when can we get to that point where it doesn't always have to be around how can we change the narrative? How can we move our culture forward into how can we just get together and have a good time, right? That doesn't have to be built on some other framework.
Yeah, I didn't plan on going this deep on this, but I love your responses to this.
This is a dope question, man.
Because you think about, in the other spaces we have, like we're building a market, and immediately 90% of the people I tell that I'm building a market, grocery store, et cetera, they assume that I'm going to try to solve the food crisis issue. And I would imagine when one of our less melanated friends may say that, they don't get that assumption. But when I say I'm going to go build a market, people assume I'm going to go try to solve the food crisis, food desert issue. And I'm like, I want to compete with Whole Foods. I want to compete with Trader Joe's. And at what point can we think that way versus always trying to, and again, if you want to do that food desert thing, that's, I applaud that. And I think we should do that. But we also have to see people like yourselves building beautiful spaces just because we want to enjoy beautiful spaces. And we want to be around other people who are like-minded in that way, that they want to enjoy people who enjoy beautiful spaces. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on Earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of Black businesses do the same. So I want every Black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
And know what's so interesting, right? So when John and I, HQ is one of the other, like we have multiple companies that sit under the Burns Brothers organization. HQ is one of them. One of them is like a marketing and branding company. And I remember when we first started it, and we also have an event company, I said, John, I don't want to be like the best black marketing company, right?
Yeah.
I don't want this company to like hire us because it's African-American or Black History Month. And so they're looking to run some program. And so then they come to us to fill some type of diverse supplier quota. I just want them, if they want the best production event company in the world, you come to Styles, right, by the Burns Brothers, not because it's black. And so I completely agree with you. I think the issue we face, and it goes back to like community and all the other stuff, is that we don't control the narrative, right? And if you don't control the narrative, you're just riding the wave of the narrative, you kind of just kind of take, it takes you wherever it wants you to go. And so community and numbers are so important. The fact that we will be the numbers, if we connect and we have this point of kind of community, then we can have the volume to start controlling our own narrative, and not just our narrative, but the narrative of the whole ecosystem. But right now, I think when you go to that food example, is that we don't control the narrative, and someone else will create the narrative for us. So that's all you could be doing if you're trying to open up a marketplace.
Yeah. That's really good. So I asked Quentin Harris, who's, I believe you guys know Quentin, he's a co-founder and CEO at Retrospect there in DC. And I asked him to send me a couple questions for you guys. I wanted to, because as somebody who's experienced your spaces and know that you guys' work, I'm like, I wonder what he would ask if he was given this opportunity. So he sent one, he sent two actually, but this first one, he said, they have very strong views on black excellence and how it restricts inclusivity and collective progress. How are they intentionally redefining the meaning of black excellence?
Mike, you want to take that one? I got to think through it. I love that question. I love, Quentin's a great guy too. So when I take it, I can kind of follow up.
So funny enough, we actually own the trademark to a phrase called Blackcellence. We have like the domain. We're not sure exactly what we're doing with it yet, but we got to figure it out. But it's tied directly to this question, right? I think that how we look at black excellence, even as black people, is like very narrow, right? And we actually then reinforce and reaffirm that by who we celebrate around excellence. It's usually athletes, it's usually entertainers. I mean, we're on a podcast with a brother who is the chairman of the board of the University of Toledo. Like, that's black excellence.
Yeah,
and so how do we tell stories that are stories that are never been told, or people who have never been highlighted, that actually show the whole gambit of what we do as people and how we do it better than anybody else. We grew up, like I said, in the civil rights era. Grandfather was part of NAACP. We took place in this contest when we were little kids called AXO. I'm not sure if it was just based out of Texas or if it was like a national like kind of quiz competition on black history. Right. And part, what was so nice about AXO is that you had to learn how black people kind of dominated in all sorts of fields that you would have never thought about. And I thought AXO like defined, like, this is black excellence, right? Like what Carver did with the Beanut is black excellence. What happened with Madam C.J. Walker, that's black excellence. I'm not saying that LeBron and all these other cats aren't black excellence as well. They are, but it's just so much bigger. And that's how I personally see it. And we need to tell the stories and highlight the things that aren't highlighted around what we're capable of and what we have done. So, John.
Yeah. And I think Mike kind of mentioned the depth of the black experience and kind of what that looks like, right? And it's very, we're not monoliths, right? So we're very multidimensional. And I think for us, as we try to build community, and especially a global community, it's highlighting these stories from around the world, what black excellence really looks like. And so I think in the US, sometimes we can get very specific around just what that concept looks like to us, but we are global black people around the world. And so to elevate that whole black excellence experience around the world is like our mission. And so I love that question, because I really, it speaks to like the opportunity that exists. Like, what if we could highlight the young cat in a village outside of Accra, what he's doing, right? Like, stuff like that is so dope to me, because I think it not only educates us as black people around the multi dimensions of the black experience, but also really heightens what black excellence truly is.
So I'm an entrepreneur like yourself with several businesses like yourselves. And there's this idea that some people will advise me, and I'm sure you've heard it before, like, you know, you should focus like on one, like you should focus on this one thing, et cetera. And I've heard it said, like, a fist is a lot stronger than five fingers separated. Like, if you took all your energy and you balled it up into one fist, you could make a bigger impact. And so my question is, like, how do you manage, not just at a high level, but actually in the trenches and function several businesses in such different categories and find success? Like, how do you guys do that?
The fifth
analogy, you might have been on our team meeting this morning. Were you listening in?
Yeah, I was about to say, we literally just had
a leadership meeting this morning, man. We spent 3 hours talking about the exact topic.
Oh, so. Wow.
It's yeah, because I think it's interesting, right? Because the whole fist analogy is interesting, right? But at the end of the day, the fist is still five separate fingers, right? Like, and if you figure out how those five fingers, which might be five different businesses, how they're still connected to a common theme, a common purpose, then it works. It's actually more impactful. So if you look at all of our businesses, they may be on the surface seem very different. Like, you got a membership house, but you also have a marketing company, then you have a diversity company, but you also have a wellness and performance organization. That is true, but all of them have the strand of delivering understanding that ultimately leads to change through different mechanisms. And no mechanism by itself is effective of all the mechanisms working together. And so the day-to-day becomes not necessarily complicated, but it's manageable, because everybody understands how they fit into the bigger picture, even if they operate or are tied to a different organization. So communication, explanation, and really helping people understand those points of connectivity is really important.
And then, well, just team. I mean, having an incredible team, right? So I think everything foundationally goes back to team. And the culture of the organization that really supports people to obviously be critical thinkers, to have grit, have integrity, have a selfless work ethic, but ultimately being aligned with the bigger mission around driving impact and mobilizing community. Because I think everything we do, again, to Mike's point, while it might have a different deliverable from like a business offering standpoint, it's really aligned with the overall mission of the larger organization.
And so we talk a lot about access to capital, which I'm sure you guys talk about also, you know, and in having businesses in such diverse categories, and like to your point, Mike, they do intersect, maybe not on the surface, but underneath. I imagine that might still make it more difficult or complex to attract outside capital. And I don't know what your stack is like. I don't know if you have outside capital, but like, how are you able to tell that story to potential investors if they're like, I know you guys are doing this, I'm interested in investing in the social club, but you also got this DEI thing over here. Then you also got this brand, you know, like, how do you tell that story?
And you tell it based upon kind of really helping them understand the journey of these businesses and how they ultimately became to form. And they were coming to being based upon addressing like a critical need and a gap that exists within kind of the work and the functions that we were operating in. So nothing was willy-nilly. And once we explain like the level of alignment across all of our business functions and kind of that red thread, it actually makes us more attractive, right? So for instance, if I'm a private membership club that needs to do marketing, I don't want to hire X, Y, and Z marketing company if I can hire a familiar entity, right? So that makes us more attractive. If I'm a private membership club that does private events, that's the bulk of our kind of revenue model, in addition to obviously the membership model, I don't want to hire an event production company or a planning company. I want to hire an entity that actually exists within the ecosystem. If I do a lot from like a programmatic standpoint for our members around DE&I, around inclusive learning, around bias training, around all those things, I don't want to hire a random vendor. I want to hire. So everything makes sense because it's all a shared experience and a model that really is aligned and synergistic across everything. So from our vantage point, it gives us a competitive advantage that other organizations wouldn't have that are just this, because we bring all these superpowers together that ultimately supports and helps the whole.
Well, Will, you get it, right? As like a brother that's run like multiple organizations, like it's taken us a while to get that narrative tight, right? Because it's so, there's so many one trick ponies out there. Like everyone just does this. And once again, that's cool too, right? Like no shade on anybody, right? Like some people just dominate in one space and like move forward, and that's awesome. But because that's a traditional model and folks like us think differently, it's hard when you go to like a VC or an investor and they're like, well, you know, I'm used to like this like one dimensional track. Like I really don't get it. And so we're not saying now that everyone has gotten it. And we haven't even really, we've been blessed to take like one business has been successful. And then we've taken the capital and the revenue that business makes to invest in the other businesses. And so we haven't actually had to go and get capital. But at the same point in time, there will be a point in time. If we really want to scale this to hit the vision that we're looking to hit, bootstrapping is probably not the way to continue to grow it to where it needs to grow. But now that we have this narrative tighter, I think it will be easier, but we still recognize that not everyone's going to still get it who we go to.
Yeah. We have so much in common. We should really talk more after this. But I've got a couple more for you guys. But, you know, given the notable individuals who you guys have had and have as members in HQDC House, like how do you leverage these connections to foster, you know, collaboration opportunities for other Black entrepreneurs within in the network?
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
I think it's just open lines of communication, right? And so we never approach members asking them to do us favors. It's more of them willing to use and leverage their network to ultimately support the community. And so it's really just being in community with people and ultimately understanding where the community is going, the community needs, and how we can collectively grow better, enhance the experiences. And I think people, and we've been so, I mean, in our wildest dreams, we never would have could perceive the impact it's actually making in people's lives. People are becoming best friends, people are doing business relationships, people are dating, but also people are creating impact and like doing things to better themselves and better their communities, which I think is the most rewarding thing. And so for us, people are volunteering of their time and of their networks to support the community that we're building. And so I think for us, that's just incredibly special.
And what we had said when we started the house, we're like, okay, like our membership base is going to be different than certain other competitors, right? Like people who we want to bring in are people going to be pretty established in their career. They're usually like the onlys in the room. Yeah. They have senior level positions, but more importantly, they may walk into a traditional club or a house or an event. They're usually the people that people are coming up to and saying, oh, can I get your business card or can you introduce me to so-and-so? And so when they walk into a room, there's no real value they receive, right? They give a lot of value, but they don't really receive a lot of value. So we said we want to create a house to where there's always mutual value exchange, that you have to be able to give as much value as you're asking to receive. And we instill that and communicate that at the very beginning of the interview process. And if you're not able to provide real value, then, and you're just looking to receive value, then you don't even make it past like the screening process. And because we set expectations early, then when you get into the house, it becomes, like John said, a very organic, people just support no matter their title, role, who they work yeah. for, what they do. And it works out.
Add to that too, to Mike's point, what I think is so, again, pretty amazing with HQ, the model that has kind of been created is, with the exception of CBC and DC, I've actually never seen anybody hand out a business card in HQ. It's really built on like authentic relationships. And I don't know, Will, how much time you spend in Washington. DC is the capital of business card transactions.
I imagine.
Right? And so I think, especially you know, in our community. And so I think it was such a kind of a treat for us to see that people actually form an authentic relationships and not just looking for a transactional relationship.
And so in the several people I've talked to recently, even who I have more entrepreneurial endeavors that are not like VC backed or et cetera, we've talked about staffing and how challenging that is, specifically in post-COVID days. And you know, especially with a marketing company, like you have, you know, the freelancer movement is huge. And then you talk about hospitality where COVID changed that landscape where, you know, it's hard to put people in kitchens and server staff, hosts, et cetera. Like, how do you navigate those challenges such that your business isn't throttled for lack of talent, personnel?
We're still figuring it out, brother. Like, real talk, this is like conversations every single day. So luckily, a lot of the businesses, you have the ability to cross train and other people can cover down on people's jobs. Membership clubs are not that, right? Like, and you get this, right? So you got to have someone at a concierge desk, and if that person isn't there, it's not like you can just call up Mike in Pennsylvania and be like, yo, can you cover down on this? And so we're still working through how do you manage like the cost of people and so not overstaff, but not get yourself in like a position to where all you have is like one person filling a role. Because not only does that put you in a point of stress around, you know, what if they don't show up, but it also puts you in a point of stress, what if they don't perform, right? Now you're like stuck with someone who's not performing because you don't have another like backup to replace them with. So there's all sorts of conundrums that come with like staffing, but like I said, like we're still figuring this out. We're still kind of exploring and young here, and any advice you have too.
Oh, I love that. I mean, it's the hardest thing, you know, and I recognize, and it sounds like you guys in this position also, you could be doing more business if you had more people. And that's the hardest part. Like if you could find more good people, the hard part is not selling. Like the opportunity is there. It's just the people to support the opportunity. That's when it's really hurtful.
Yeah.
Bro, yep. Well, you could, I mean, like some positions we've been like interviewing for like 4 months. I mean, it's like, but you're exactly right. And that's like the challenge, because the opportunities exist, but you can't support the opportunities because you just don't have the people to fill the jobs. But yeah, it's definitely a daily challenge for us.
Along that thread, I imagine, because, you know, again, I feel so much similarity with you guys. I imagine some of the ideas and companies you started, you know, ultimately just don't work out because this is the nature of the beast. Like, how do you set expectations on what success looks like or should look like at various stages to ensure your efforts are going into something that's worthwhile?
So, you know, full transparency, I call myself a serial entrepreneur, right? I've been like doing this entrepreneurship game for like a long time. And I have had way more failures than success. As a matter of fact, like obviously the Burns Brothers is the biggest success. And it's because I managed to partner with someone who I know has a work ethic as high as I do, right? I think you can probably attest, Will, oftentimes in the space of entrepreneurship, there's like one person who's the horse, the other person's the carriage, right? And they just feel like you're just pulling one partner. That doesn't ever work. But the other problem you have in entrepreneurship, which we faced before, is that there's certain things that seem sexy, like tech is sexy, apps are tech sexy. So people want to jump into things that they don't have the subject matter expertise in, right? Like John and I know people, we're passionate about, you know, change and impact for people of color. We're able to mobilize community. So what we do inside of HQ and the other businesses, it was a natural fit, so it works. Some of the other experiences that I have, like at some point in time, you just know that it's not working. Right, whether it be like, oh man, I can't continue to take out my savings, like type of no, or that, you know, like just I've had to reposition the value proposition 20 times because it isn't sticking. Like whatever that reason is, it appears differently for different organizations. But I think that everyone deep down inside, they have to admit it to themselves, but they kind of just know that it's time to move on and jettison what they were doing.
Yeah, and then Will, too, even under the Burns Brothers, I mean, we've tried things. I mean, my brother and I have been serial entrepreneurs in a sense, but also even within the Burns Brothers umbrella, we are constant dreamers, right? And so sometimes it takes like team members, like our chief of staff and our COO to be like, hey, fellas, dreaming is good, but we also have to make sure we're actually delivering on the businesses that we have, right? So it's also ensuring that you have those checks and balances internally, because I think big dreamers dream big, right? But you also have to be practical around what can be actually achieved. And so having those folks within the organization that can level set things too. And then also too, not putting too much in your plate. And I know we talked about the fist and the five finger analogy, but I think there's also value in really drilling down into organizations and not spreading yourself too wide. And so as in totality of our organization, we're really focused on kind of drilling down into organizations more as opposed to spreading ourselves too thin. And so we recognize that, and we've been very intentional about how we can do that, how do we approach that, and how do we be successful with that.
You know, Mike, you mentioned tech, and I think about, I'm always interested, like when I see people's, you know, the desktop of their phone, like what apps they have on, I'm just always curious on like what apps people are using. And so I'm curious in how you guys, what you guys use for people who out there are looking for systems and technology to help them be more efficient. Like, what do you guys use tactically, technically, to be more efficient? Like, some of the things that, you know, are invaluable to me are like Slack. Like, my whole team, well, on both of my teams, are on Slack. And so we are always having these conversations. Freshdesk is one that we use to, you know, so if a member has an issue, they can submit it and it's not going to get lost because we can all see that this person sent an email in. So can you talk about some of the things that you've used in your lives to make sure, technical things that you've used to ensure that you're as efficient as possible?
Yeah, we're definitely, we're not necessarily a Slack org. We use a lot of Microsoft Teams and we built all sorts of team channels that we communicate with each other on. We've really started to adopt a platform, we're still testing it out, called Copilot. So when you're looking at like outreach and how do you integrate your LinkedIn with this kind of AI and kind of technology driven kind of outreach platform. So from a BD standpoint, so leveraging that. From like a CRM standpoint, because we know how important it is to have the processes inside of the pipeline, we use an organization or a technology called Pipedrive to help manage all of that and all of our automated communications and things like that. And then when we're thinking just around like the membership experience, we currently use a platform called PeopleVine, which we're able to build our membership apps through and things like that. But we're also, as we're expanding the community and what we do, we're looking at other platforms as well that have more of like a community engagement interaction model, which we look to roll out here and leverage in the next month or two. So those are
our other piece that Mike mentioned too, is like our project management tool, Wrike, has been, you know, an essential and critical piece to like, obviously from a project management standpoint, it's been since we first launched, you know, a couple of years ago. So
yeah,
that's been a great tool.
Yeah, we use Asana on that side for project management, just seeing our stuff. And I've tried different ones. I think it was Basecamp we were using for a long time. Yep. And Basecamp will tell you, like, we know you guys asked for more features. We're not going to build more features. And so at some point, we needed more features than Basecamp even said that they were going to do. So we had to graduate, you know. And I'm sure there's many more out there, but those have been in my journey also. Now, one more from Quentin. He said, family is family, and working with family, let alone siblings, can be a difficult task. What is your dynamic as family entrepreneurs? How do you make space for each other's individual brilliance?
Yeah, no, I think Mike and I definitely are still siblings, right? We're only two siblings in our family, right? So he's my big brother, so Mike definitely can big brother me sometimes. So I definitely understand that dynamic. But I think we also recognize kind of the brilliance that we each kind of collectively bring, and there's a level of respect that we have for each other, and there's a level of respect that we kind of convey to the team as well. But as you kind of go on this journey with your sibling, you ultimately realize kind of their talents, right? And you want them to really lean into their talents. And I think over the last couple of years, we've been really great with letting the person with that talent be kind of leading that level, I mean, leading that area of expertise, and kind of take a step back with respect to other areas that the other person might have kind of more expertise in. So I think it's just learning someone, just like you learn anybody in any relationship, and then ultimately kind of navigating through those kind of hurdles to ultimately kind of get to the finish point that where it's more of a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, and I think if you like use like a sports team analogy, right? Like the great teams have great players, but what makes them really great is they know I'm going to throw the ball and I know exactly where that receiver is going to be because I've been playing with them for so long.
Yeah.
Right? It just happens. And so when you have a sibling and there's only two of you, right? Like we're the only people, the only kids of our mother and father, like you spend your whole time together, your whole life is together. So I know how John thinks. I know where John's going to be on the field, and I know what value John brings to the table. And so John is a very empathetic human being. I'm a very like pragmatic like human being, right? And so you need both of those because you can't be always X, Y, and Z and just give me the bottom line up front. Sometimes you got to like feel and be there for the people. And so John and I play both those parts. John is very much a visionary. He's like a creative. And he sees the 10,000 foot view. I'm very much an operator, right? I operate at like 500 feet. And so us being patient with each other and understanding that I can't get frustrated when he's at 1,000 feet and he can't get frustrated with me when I'm like, hey, we got to figure out how we're going to execute and get this done and understand all the dots. And I think that we wouldn't effectively be able to make those connections if we didn't have the relationship of being brothers and spending our whole lives together.
So in closing, talk to me about 2024 and 20, like, what are you excited about over the next year? We're ending in the first quarter now. What are you excited about over the next, you know, little bit of future?
Yeah, no, well, and that's a great question. And we're excited about a couple of things, but I think the biggest thing that I could say collectively we're excited about, we're actually launching what we're calling the HQ House Global Network, where our goal is to convene, to build community with 1 million Black professionals around the globe by 2026, right? We want to be this global convener of Black people around the globe. And so later this year, we're launching this concept in 10 cities globally. And more to come around what those cities are and kind of what that community looks like. But we really believe in going back to Mike's point, to really have true influence, to have true power, you have to be in community with people, not just in this country, but around the globe. And that leads you to be able to influence policy, influence business, influence legislation, because there's power in numbers. And so how can we no longer think just domestically, because now we know Africa is going to have such an influence from like a population standpoint in the next decade. How can we now think globally around mobilizing people, community, convening people, providing people with development and opportunities, but also providing people with social experiences? And so we're super excited to launch the HQ House Global Network, which will be that convening platform.
Love that.
Yeah. And the only thing I would add to what John says that I'm excited about is the ability to like help change mindsets of individuals. Right, I'm a big believer that the biggest muscle that we have is our brain, but also the biggest anchor that we have is our brain, right? And if we can do anything over the next year, and we're doing a lot of development stuff inside of the HQ ecosystem as well, like to help people unlock the anchor that's holding them down, because they start to realize that unconsciously they were doing things and they were accepting things. Like, if we can start touching those lives and chipping away to create that freedom because we're opening that mind, to me, that becomes a huge opportunity and ties into the mission of the connectivity to drive change.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity Afrotech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. It's produced by Morgan DeBon and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Sarah Ergen in Love Beach. Special thank you to Micah Davis and Kate McDonald. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at Afrotech.com. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Share this with somebody. Go get your money. Peace and love. Check me out at the annual Black Effect Podcast Festival, happening Saturday, April 27th in Atlanta. Live podcasts are on deck from some of your favorite shows, including this one, Black Tech Green Money, and also some of the best podcasts in the game, like Deeply Well with Devi Brown and Carefully Reckless. Atlanta is one of my favorite cities in the world. I lived there for 2 years, actually. And my worldview, seeing us successful in every industry and not having any limits on our potential, largely was shaped by Atlanta. So to be there with you, doing this podcast, talking about how we build or leverage technology to build wealth, come on, man, it doesn't get better. I want to see you there. Get your tickets today at blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful Black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on Earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news.
sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait, did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.